This is Aiden Lohr with Oddball Pilot. I'm sitting here with Tyler Westhoff, who I flew with in Talkeetna this summer. And what we're really going to concentrate on today is how Tyler got his start in flying and the commercial glider flying that he was doing in Hawaii prior to, well, somewhat prior. We'll see what he has to say coming over to Talkeetna Air Taxi. So, Tyler, let's just start with when you first got interested in aviation. That's something you've wanted to do for a long time, or?
No, I was in college for photojournalism for a couple of years before I was working up in Talkeetna in a non-flying capacity. I was actually flew with Talkeetna Air Taxi about, let's see, it would have been in 04, and just as kind of a comp ride from the lodge I was working at, and kind of got interested in that at the same time I was becoming less interested in making a career out of photography, so decided that I'd start working in that direction. So that summer I got my private airplane license in Talkeetna. After that, I didn't really know where to go from there, like a lot of people. And just kind of on a tip, somebody told me that I should try out flying gliders in Hawaii because I could get a commercial license a lot quicker than I would be able to in an airplane, and I could start getting paid to fly a lot earlier. And that's what I did.
So you started flying. You did all your primary training in Talkeetna with Drew over at Above Aviation.
In a champ.
So you learned how to fly in a champ.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know going into it that you wanted to fly in a tail dragger, or was that just where the flight school was, and that's just what was available?
Probably didn't even know the difference.
Okay. So just, there's a flight school, and let's go for it.
I knew that it would be, if I wanted to do something like I had seen at Talkeetna Air Taxi, that it would be helpful to fly in Alaska.
Okay.
Apart from that, I didn't realize that being in a tail dragger and learning to fly in a tail dragger was going to lead to
more jobs in tail draggers.
More jobs and opportunity, yeah.
Do you think, I'm just going to harp on this a bit, because we just had some posts on this, and I think there's some real value in training in a tail dragger. I think you learn more stick and rudder. Do you feel like that was probably the case, or?
I feel like for sure, if you're gonna, if you know that you're going to want to fly small airplanes, especially in Alaska, you got to start out with a tail dragger, and if not starting out with it, jump into it right after that and start making it second nature. Not something that's scary and different and dangerous.
Right, yeah, actually just saw that. I mean, flown tail draggers a bit, but I've never done them in any concentrated time, even this summer. All my reactions are wrong for landing. Yeah. I mean, I can think through it, but it wasn't until, you know, I put 20 hours on the plane that it started getting, okay, this is right. Mm. Otherwise, I was thinking more, and I've always thought if you did your, started right from the get-go in a tail dragger, it would probably be more instinctive.
Yeah. I think so. And believe it or not, the glider stuff, I think, also helps in that same vein, because when you're landing on a glider, you're landing on one wheel, and you're pivoting on three axes still, basically. And so you're learning to find that balance point with the yaw and the pitch, and even the roll in that case, more so than even a tail dragger.
So you're still flying the plane even once the wheel's on the ground.
That's right.
Flying the glider.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's...
if you let go, it'll weather a vane right into the wind.
Oh, especially in a glider. They're so touchy. They're made to respond to the wind.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd heard glider flying is probably a way to get time a little quicker. So you left Alaska and you went to Hawaii to fly gliders specifically, or you went there and found...
That was the plan. I didn't know how well it worked, but I put $4,000 or $5,000 into commercial training for a glider, so I was basically trying to get my 100 solo flights, which qualify, 100 PIC flights is the regulation, which qualifies you for a commercial glider license, and if you can do that, which you can actually do in about 3 or 4 days, it's kind of a strange thing that you can go from being a non-commercial pilot to a commercial pilot in that short amount of time, or even a non-private pilot. I mean, as long as you get checked out in the glider solo and then do your 100 PIC flights and along with a couple other time requirements, you can have a commercial license relatively quickly.
So prior to having a powered airplane license.
Correct.
Huh, so you... Well, that's kind of cool.
I had a private airplane license when I went over there, but there were people going over there and doing the same thing I was doing with no prior training and getting a license, a commercial license, in less than a month.
Okay.
Which isn't, you know, it can be a good thing, as long as it's overseen in the right way.
Right.
The right instructor, and you get the correct checkouts for the particular glider operation you're flying for.
And you're going to be pretty much doing the same flights that you'd been doing with those 100 flights.
Right.
But with passengers.
Correct. And definitely the flying that we, the glider flying that happens in Hawaii is limited and also at the same time very limitless. I mean, the amount of ridge lift there is very consistent, and you can take, on a good day, you can take a tow and stay up all day long flying the ridge lift. I lost my train of thought there.
So the commercial glider flying in Hawaii, it's mainly tourists?
There's a couple different brackets to it. There is the instruction, and the company that I work for did instruction as well as commercial rides.
Okay. And your 100 hours of PIC to get your commercial glider, that's not a CFI. That's
not a CFI. A CFI is in addition to that afterwards.
So that would be, so you were mainly flying tours at first.
Right.
And then when you came back, got your, can you get a CFI glider without having a powered glider CFI?
Yes, you can.
So is it, you need, so you could give you your CFI, you get your commercial glider, and then just continue right on to a CFI glider.
Correct.
And you could potentially never even fly a powered airplane at all.
Yeah, for sure.
And it sounds like in some areas you could actually make a career of that of sorts.
Some people do. Yeah, and it's real fun flying. It's very rewarding, very natural kind of flying. You know, it's you don't have to worry about fuel or engine instruments. It's all by feel, even more by the seat of your pants than airplane flying, really.
Huh? Is there much talking involved with the tours? Kind of like flying the tours here, where we talk about the mountains a lot.
Yeah, there is. Although one advantage that I always liked in flying glider tours is that they're fairly time limited. I mean, most people that have never been in a glider before don't need to fly much more than 20 minutes.
Okay.
And so you're doing a lot of flights as opposed to longer flights, which, believe it or not, is less exhausting.
Huh, okay. What's the transition from the powered plane to glider like? Is that a pretty easy transition, or?
If you had flown airplanes a lot, I can imagine it's a little bit more difficult, but I, being a glider instructor, I didn't feel like I had much trouble. You know, if there was a competent airplane pilot teaching him the basics of landing a glider.
Right, and it shouldn't be too bad.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be too difficult.
Huh,
so what gliders were you flying over there?
The gliders that we were flying were, let's see, the Schweitzer 232 is basically the only three-seater glider they ever made. Not sure if it was originally intended to be a three-seater, but they used it as a reconnaissance aircraft and put little jet engines under the wings for missions in, heck, I don't know where, but I know I've seen the mounts for the engines underneath the wings still.
So it was a military plane at one point, a glider?
At one point they used it for that. I'm not sure if Schweitzer initially intended it for that, but it was designed as a high-performance glider at the time, metal fuselage and wings, and 34-1, I think, and a nice big bubble-top canopy and a stabilator with lots of control, and a little heavier glider, but penetrates real well when you're trying to go a certain distance. Maybe nothing compared to some of the fiberglass gliders that are coming out of Germany nowadays.
But pretty good. High performance. High performance three-person glider.
Yeah, for sure. And it makes, for what we do, for what we were using for why it soars just fine, and you get nice penetration, good cruise speed, basically.
And what was the outfit you were working with?
It's called the Original Glider Rides.
Original Glider Rides, okay. How many gliders did they have?
We had, at any point in time, three operational 232s. At least two operational 233, which was the trainer version of the Schweitzer. It's basically a metal wing, but a fabric over steel tubing fuselage, and a tandem setup, one person in front, one in the back. A little okay. less penetration and a little lighter, floatier.
Huh. So pretty good size operation.
Yeah, and then we had the ASK-21, which is a German-built glider. Aerobatic, you know, sustain inverted as long as you want. We did aerobatic rides consistently and aerobatic instruction.
Okay, cool. In terms of getting the toe up, do you tow them also?
After my first year flying in the glider operation, I had enough time to get my commercial airplane license, which I got limited without an instrument rating, so that I could fly within 25 miles or whatever it is of the airport and tow gliders. And so, after the first year, I was towing in the Bird Dog, which is L-19, Cessna 305. Really fun airplane, lots of visibility, really squirrely tail dragger.
So you learned how to fly in Talkeetna here in Alaska, then you went to Hawaii. Were you there year-round at that point?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so that was just your job for that while you were building your time.
Yeah, and it's a difficult job to sustain a living in Hawaii. But it can be done.
Except were you living in a tent?
Initially, when I was doing my training, I was living in a tent. And then for the first year that I was working there part-time, I was actually living at a camp right down the road. But really awesome place to live, really. It's right on the
beach.
One of the most isolated parts of Oahu. And, yeah, cool North Shore waves and blue water. And airport's right next to the beach. Pristine beach with almost nobody on it all the time.
So a lot of it's about a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle thing, for sure.
Yeah, surfing on the time off.
And even now when I go back to Hawaii in the winter times, I go work at that job not for money, because, you know, really I don't know, unless you're involved in a very successful glider operation, most of the glider operations you see around the States are clubs and people just pitching in to fly for fun because it's fun to fly gliders. It's not a whole lot of really successful glider commercial operations. I know there's some in Colorado, maybe one or two in California. It's hard to make. I think it's hard for these companies to make a lot of money unless somebody really set it up differently.
Sounds like drop zones, flying skydivers.
I think drop zones are more profitable.
It might be,
if they do it right. Numbers. That's the thing. You can only take one or two people at a time.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, if your tow plane's running all day long, it needs maintenance and all sorts of stuff.
Did you prefer towing or flying the glider?
You know what's cool about, what was really neat about the flying in Hawaii is the diversity. I could fly one day in the tow plane, do instruction the next day, and then do rides the next day, and or do all three in the same day.
Cool.
And when you can diversify like that and hop into a couple different aircraft, if not a couple different categories of aircraft in a day.
Keeps it interesting.
It keeps it interesting. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the tow, it's, you know, you don't have to talk to people as much. And you're kind of by yourself and you can focus on flying.
Does it pay the same, whether you're towing or in the glider?
When it comes down to it, the towing did pay a little bit more. They're changing the pay scales quite a bit when I was there, but I think the way a lot of glider operations work is you might get paid a daily rate and then get paid per flight, and then tips are always part of it.
Okay. I know why that's it's a tourist culture, so it's probably people understand.
It's tips. All,
yeah. Cool. You mentioned trikes and powered hand gliders as well as another way to supplement the income from the gliders.
My last year in Hawaii, I got my sport CFI in weight shift control. And so at that point in time, I was going between three different category aircrafts in a day, which was fun. The trikes are really neat, open cockpit, weight shift control aircraft. And we were doing flight instruction that's light sport, so you can't do commercial ride in it. But we were also basically doing flight instruction with somebody who'd never flown before and didn't really have an intention on flying again after that.
Okay, so, like a almost intro flight, but more like
an intro flight. Essentially, cool. What it boiled down to is people thought they were getting a scenic flight, and they were.
Right.
But legally, we were given instruction. And we signed logbooks and everything. Really fun aircraft to fly. Very strong, modern aircraft. Most of the ones we were flying were airborne, built in Australia. Rotax engines on them. 4.5 gallons an hour, and you could take off super short and land super short and The only disadvantage to them is they're super light wing loading, and you're basically holding the wing in your hands. And so when it gets bumpy, you feel it.
Through your arms.
Through your arms.
It's like riding a bike.
There's
on
rough roads.
There's
no mechanical advantage. It is what it says it is, weight shift control. And so they were really fun and really enjoyable in the mornings and in the evenings and occasionally in the day when it was less wind and less convective activity, but a lot of work when it turned
rough.
Convective or windy, yeah.
So how did this tie in when you came back to Alaska and you've been flying for TAT now for several years? I mean, I've seen you here for I don't know how many years.
Luckily, when I was working at that operation, I flew a lot of different aircraft that were that would facilitate me flying other high-performance tail draggers. The L-19 is a high-performance squirrely tail dragger, so that basically qualifies you immediately for most high-performance tail draggers. I was also flying a Pitts S2B for that operation, doing aerobatic rides for a little while. Another very squirrely, high-performance tail dragger with very low visibility. But exposure to all those different kinds of aircraft, including the gliders, helped when I, you know, gave the boss here at TAT a call and said, hey, I've got a couple thousand hours now, and I feel like I'm qualified to get checked out in your aircraft, so will you give me a shot? And we went for it.
That seemed like a pretty good mix going between Alaska in the summer and Hawaii in the winter. It sounds almost ideal.
It sounds ideal. The trouble is the transitions.
Cost money and takes time.
Cost money takes time, and unless you've really got it dialed in, you've got to find a new place to live every 6 months.
Right.
And you've got a place to have a place to store your stuff if you have stuff, which you do accumulate after you live in places for long enough.
Yeah. How's the when you're flying the gliders and just your job in Hawaii? Your daily life in terms of what time you get to work, when you're usually done work.
Hawaii's cool. It's because they want to take advantage of the lift that's produced by the winds. They typically don't start till 10 o'clock.
Okay.
You might have to show up at work at 9:30 or so, which leaves room for a surf session in the morning and the one in the evening. Wind dies out, you know, later on in the day, and so they typically don't do flights. Can't do flights past sunset anyway, so.
Cool.
Usually time enough for one in the evening too.
And most of the people you're working with, they're into surfing or into out doing something.
Seems like most people in Hawaii are involved in the outdoors in one way or another, if not the ocean. I would say a third, two-thirds of the pilots that I flew with like to surf or be in the water in one way or another.
Right. Yes. Yeah, I mean, just from talking to you yesterday, I mean, all I could think of is what a cool way to get into aviation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always thought flying skydivers was kind of more fun than instructing, but yeah, now I'm jealous.
It was fun.
Really
feel lucky to have had the opportunities that I got, but at the same time, I positioned myself in a spot to where I did have opportunities, and once I was there, I didn't stop and wait for somebody to say, all right, would you like to fly the tow plane? I said, hey, can I fly the tow plane? What do I have to do to fly your tow plane?
Right.
You know?
That's what I've actually seen that a lot, but the opportunities are there if you make them. They don't just, I think the cord of that headset's caught in the door. And I think that's actually good advice for anyone getting into aviation, is you've got to make the opportunities. Things don't just, nobody's going to walk up and offer you a job. You need to decide how you want to go about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then an opportunity pops up, you got to take it. That's sort of how it seemed to me, at least. And it seems like you did that pretty well. I don't know, Hawaii just stuff sounds fun.
Hawaii's a good lifestyle.
So any recommendation for someone who's just getting into flying and maybe, who knows if they where they want to end up? They want to fly in Alaska or?
I feel like if you want to fly in Alaska, the glider route is a good route because you have a good opportunity to learn the seat of your pants flying, which comes in handy in a tail dragger,
yeah,
or float plane for that matter. And you're have more likelihood to be exposed to, you know, different kind of aircraft that would make you more qualified in a tail drag.
And you might actually start making money sooner because everybody's fighting over those instructor slots at every flight school, but not many people are thinking of commercial gliders.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, that wraps it up. I'm going to have to come visit you in Hawaii.
Come get the glider rating.
Absolutely. One last question. Roughly, what does a glider rating cost?
I would say it's a little cheaper than an airplane rating if you're starting from scratch.
Okay.
And then the add-on, if you already have an airplane license, is fairly cheap.
Okay.
I would plan on, you know, if you're at a commercial glider operation, $1,000 to $2,000 for the add-on. If you're at a club, a lot of times it's super cheap. You know, the club that I was flying in Arizona, you know, you paid a small membership fee every month or whatever, and apart from that, you paid for the gas for the winch, which is another really cheap form to launch a glider.
Oh, yeah, winch it. Yep. Does that not work as well in Hawaii? Because you need lift right away with a winch.
You could use a winch. What happens in this field in Hawaii is just there's too much air traffic and too much volume of glider rides that we need to get done.
Right.
And flights that we need to launch. Whereas a winch, you typically launch one airplane, pull the winch back out again, set it up. It takes 2 to 3 people to manage all that, the hooking up, and it's more of a club kind of thing.
Oh, wow. So it's actually more complicated. I think it'd be simpler than a plane, but it's not like a catapult on an aircraft carrier.
It's not as simple. It's usually simple technology, like an old pickup truck engine with a flywheel on it.
Huh.
But it does take longer. Whereas a towplane can whip you up to 800 feet, come down, and pick up the next glider within a minute or so.
So when you're towing, okay, I guess I'm not quite done here. So when you're towing, it's pretty quick turns. You're up,
yeah.
You drop them, you come back down, pick another one up.
Point one if you're lucky.
Okay, so.
But it's fun flying because you're, you know, in a day of flying towplanes, you can do 30 to 40, if not 50 takeoff and landings.
Wow. Yeah, I thought skydivers were good when we'd do, you know, maybe 20.
Yeah.
Probably not even that. That would have been a lot.
That's a lot of loads.
That's a lot of loads. Cool. So that's a pretty viable way if somebody doesn't have a glider rating. Well, actually, that's another question. If you don't have a glider rating, are people going to hire you to tow?
Glider pilots like tow pilots that are glider pilots, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that way.
Okay.
More often than not, people get their glider rating before they start towing for an operation.
Okay.
But it can happen that you're disqualified in the airplane. I can't remember the regulations specifically, but it's worth looking up. There is two different ways to actually stay current as a tow pilot, one of which is towing, and the other which is actually flying gliders.
Okay. Just to keep track of kind of, you know what to expect.
Yeah, and there's definitely some terminology and signals and lingo that you learn as part of your endorsement and or glider rating.
And I'm guessing that you're not going to get a job either as a glider, a commercial glider pilot, or as the tow pilot if you don't show up in person.
I feel like it's like that with
every
almost
job.
Any job in general aviation.
Yeah.
You can't speak to the bigger operations, but I wouldn't have got any of my jobs if I wasn't there in person.
I feel like Alaska's very much that way. You have to show up. I think some of the bigger companies, they only take submissions over the internet these days. Mm-hmm. But certainly up here, it sounds like glider, that's a pretty small community.
Yeah.
And probably the place that if you started towing gliders, or if you went to a club and got a glider rating and were already a powered pilot, you'd probably be more likely to be able to tow, maybe not for any pay, though.
That's what Sam did that used to work here. Did you ever meet Sam?
I didn't meet Sam, no.
He was a ramper, and he was down in Portland. He started flying gliders and eventually got his commercial airplane license, and now he's towing for a club down there.
Huh. Did you ever fly tow banners?
Mm-mm.
Nope.
Never.
Something else I needed to dig into.
Banner towers. No wonder. It seems like...
Any particular challenges with towing gliders that you can think of?
Oh, yeah.
Lots.
It's a challenging job.
Is it?
But it's a good challenge. It's all sorts of fun kind of challenges that you would not encounter in other kinds of flying. I mean, not only are you expected to, you know, keep the right position and attitude for the glider behind you, but you also have to navigate in terms of traffic and weather and also looking for the lift and knowing where to find the lift, not taking the glider in the wrong spot and dropping him in 2,000 feet a minute of sink.
Right. That would suck.
Yeah. And then also keeping separation from, you know, five or six other gliders in the air that don't have a radio.
Right.
Which isn't the case in some places, but in Hawaii it was. Gliders didn't run radios.
Huh. No electrical system on them.
Correct. Huh. Super simple.
Yeah. Cool. Well, at some point, if I come to you in Hawaii, we'll dig into some of those challenges. That sounds like that might be a longer conversation.
A lot of fun to be had.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Cool. All right. Well, thanks for sitting down with us.
We hope you liked this interview. If you found it useful, visit oddballpilot.com, oddballpilot.com, for more stuff like it.